Good afternoon to all our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Thanks to Canadian band Mr. Something Something from Toronto and the Afrobeat poet Ikwunga for our theme song, You Are Beautiful. My name is Jim Hutchings, and this week I'm joined by our co-host Mona Hill. Good afternoon, Mona.
Good afternoon, Jim.
And today we'll be talking with members of Kairos, Dan Beveridge and Bert Pitzel. Welcome.
Glad to be here,
yes.
We're thrilled to have you here. Bert didn't send me a bio, so I'm going to get Bert to tell the listeners all about himself. A little bit of background.
Okay. Well, probably the most significant thing for me is that I come from a family of 17 children. So therefore, this issue of justice was alive for me right from the get-go. And skipping along the way here somewhat, I became a teacher, had a full career in education that way, taught for 30 years. And I'm in my 15th year now as coordinator of social justice for the Archdiocese of Regina. So this is my 45th year of work. And as coordinator, I am to be in touch with about 165 parishes in Saskatchewan to remind them, and I suppose inspire them, that justice is an indispensable leg of the work of the church and the existence of the church.
That's great. Anything else you want to add?
Well, I last summer was in Cambodia on a solidarity trip. It was a 3-week trip. I got to see some of the partners from Development and Peace. So that there's that part of me. I also, in 2003, got to the World Social Forum in Porto Alegre.
Wow.
I wasn't sponsored by Kairos, but Kairos made all the arrangements, so I kind of...
That's great.
And so I've always seen justice as a worthwhile commitment, a necessary commitment, and something that is worthwhile even to fail at. You put your best step forward and go from there. Something always comes up.
Oh, I think that's wonderful. Thanks. And Dan Beveridge, since I do have your bio, I'll talk a little bit about Dan, who is also has been a professor of education at the University of Regina. You're now retired from that job and working full-time as a volunteer, it sounds like. We often talk about our paid job and our unpaid jobs, right? You're involved, Director of Climate Change Saskatchewan up until 2004, Climate Change Education Saskatchewan, Consultant with Saskatchewan Instructional Development and Research Unit. Holy cow, Saskatchewan Education for Sustainable Development Network and the Education and Communications Subcommittee of the City of Regina, Green Ribbon Advisory Committee on Climate Change. Lots of work on climate change. And this one's very interesting. The climate change issue table on public education and outreach set up by the Government of Canada to help implement Canada's compliance with the 1997 Kyoto Protocol. Has that been done yet?
Not really.
Okay.
No, I was involved in quite a number of climate change efforts, and you can see that I have quite a keen interest in that. The connection, though, with other countries, mm-hmm. and the global connection, though, is maybe earlier than that. A college buddy and I decided to take a year off from university and go on a hitchhiking trip around the world. And
that would have been a while back.
A while back, yeah, 1959 and 60. We hitchhiked, for example, 4 months through Africa, and visited a lot of places before independence. So that gave quite a keen interest in international things. My parents also were United Church ministers, and they were always talking about this and having visiting missionaries come in talking about what they were doing in Angola, etc. And then after my wife and I got married, we went to work in one of those countries, Congo. So that, again, you know, made a stronger interest, not so much in justice. I don't think I was really aware of the justice aspect until getting into to meeting more people here in Regina and their concerns. And that kind of steered into that direction. Right. And Kairos, for example, which we can talk about.
Sure. And I think what's really interesting is the time has come where we're talking about environment as a justice issue, aren't we?
Yes.
They're becoming completely enmeshed.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Yes.
Yes.
The ecological justice as well as the human rights, social and economic justice aspect.
And I would put it under one topic. I would say the integrity of creation, and creation would include not only our life together with others, but also includes the fact that we're part of the community of all living things.
Absolutely.
And the being of all things.
Yeah.
So it really comes under that one broad umbrella.
Right. The Unitarians use the phrase the interconnected web of existence.
Okay.
And that we're all part of that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
Well, that does remind us that the church does have an additional challenge in that line, because at least in the Christian faith, there has been a strong emphasis on the superiority of human beings,
right,
dominating nature. And that's a big heritage we have to buck. We have to reverse that. Because look at some of the results of that viewpoint. But I think it's well underway.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, the World Council of Churches, for example, has been working on this idea of a just, participatory, and sustainable society for several decades now,
right,
including what Bert mentioned, the justice, peace, and the integrity of creation, that key initiative.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's no scriptural basis for dominating, the environment, because we're called to till and keep. Mm-hmm. I like the word keep. Creation.
Yeah.
So we have to do that intelligently under the umbrella of shalom. You know,
okay.
There has to be a peaceful
result
that comes out of all of this.
A few years ago when David Suzuki was in town speaking, I heard him talk about what he had learned from our First Nations brothers and sisters about that, and how it changed his whole way of thinking years back.
Yeah.
So we have so much to learn from each other.
On to David Suzuki, an issue that has not been debated by the political leaders. He said the number one issue is the biosphere, you know, that womb in which we live, and nobody's talking about that. And if we dirty our nest or poison our nest, then where are we headed?
Right.
That's the big question.
Yeah.
And we aren't talking about that politically.
Right. Yeah, and maybe we'll do a show on that. We'll get you guys to do your research and bring you back. Okay.
Ah.
Today we're here to talk about Kairos, so, because you're both members of Kairos. You both work together in the local community group. And so let's take it and let's talk first about a little bit about the history of Kairos. So what do we have here? Where did it come from? What was the original purpose? What does it stand for? Take it away. It's your show.
Well, when I arrived in Regina, it was just in 1973 that that they started what they called 10 Days for World Development, February 1 to 10 in 1973, and that the church leaders from the major Christian churches in Canada came across Canada talking about the importance of world development. They didn't use the word justice at that time, but it was focusing on justice issues. And so this began a program of education and action for global justice, and there were other ecumenical coalitions at the same time dealing with, for example, a Southern Africa Working Group, Latin American Working Group, Anti-Poverty in Canada, Indigenous Rights, and so on. These were all separate ecumenical groups in Canada, slightly separate. And then in the year 2000, I think it was, Kairos was formed, uniting all these different streams into one organization. And at that time, it was called 10 Days for Global Justice, that became one of the, I don't know, seven or eight partners. And so those coalitions became Kairos, Canadian Ecumenical Justice Initiatives. Kairos has, at the national level, 11 Canadian churches and religious organizations. And it has also probably about 22 overseas partners that it works with, and it has a regional organizational structure with about, it used to have about 100 local groups. It may be less than that now. So here in Saskatchewan, we have probably about three or four local groups, in Alberta, probably a few more. And so we're certainly representing the Regina group. And as I said, the purpose really is a faithful action for justice, thinking both of ecological justice and human rights, as we mentioned. And the four kind of key ways that Kairos does this is through education and advocacy, those particularly here in Canada, and research and partnership. So those four are the areas that we'll be talking about probably today. I probably should mention that here in Regina we have no budget. We're not paid. We're very voluntary.
You need steak nights.
So we try to keep membership in some of the provincial coalitions. And when I bring this up at our local groups, people just reach in their back pocket and throw, fives or tens on the table. That's how we budget.
They say a budget is a theological statement, And so if we have no budget, it just means that we know that gifts are given to be given.
Right.
They're given to us to be given, and gratuitously. So that's what we do. Just to add a bit on what Dan said, that original group was called Plural. And it stood for the Presbyterians, the Lutherans, United Church, Roman Catholics, and Anglicans. And they would go around making interventions on behalf of peace. So, and another
that
one
was one of the streams that joined into Kairos.
And that's then there's the corporate responsibility and so forth. So with all of those church-based programs, it was decided that there's too much repetitiveness, and that we could cut costs by bringing it under one broad umbrella, and we call it Kairos, and Kairos comes from a Greek word meaning time, but the readiness of time. The time is right. The time is now. The iron is hot. We must work with it right now.
It's not
chronological time, but it's a time of readiness. So it's
wonderful.
Time to turn the tables on what is going on.
That's wonderful.
At some level.
Okay. So now we can move on to what projects Kairos has been working on. You can go back as far as you want.
Yeah.
You know, what's the most important thing? Well, if you want to talk nationally or if you want to talk locally, that's fine.
In terms of the integrity of creation, we have our life together with others. And that would include a relationship with the source of our being, the beginning. We would say that God, the Creator. But then there is the, I suppose you'd say, family, then local, then national and international. And we hope that through this work there is a solidarity that is produced. I think what we have focused mainly on here, Kairos Regina anyway, is the local aspect of that. Although we realize that we cannot afford to forget about the national programs.
Right. So. I noticed one of your themes is water and bottled water. So that would translate into actually international theme, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Every year, Kairos has produced an education and action guide. And it always has lots of ideas on what you can do locally to create awareness on various issues. And I know, for me, I guess the way I came into it, I found Kairos as kind of a way of helping to get at these issues within our own church. I happen to be a member of a Wesley United Church and a social justice committee, and we were able to lift, like skits, for example, mm-hmm. skits on bottled water or skits on some other example of mining impacts on local communities in the Philippines, for example, and put those in front of the congregation so that they'd see vividly in about 3 minutes what some of the issues were. And the congregation really likes that kind of thing, seeing their young people up there doing this kind of thing. So water was certainly one of them, and mining, as I mentioned, particularly the
issue.
Canadian corporations that are in the Philippines and Latin America and elsewhere, and some of the impacts that they have. And some of these impacts are not pretty, because generally there have to be deals made with local leaders, sometimes bribing, not always. And for community leaders who get involved in struggling for saying we should have a say in this, some of these leaders are simply assassinated.
Right.
This is not pretty. So we try to bring that sort of thing to people's attention and say this, we should be doing something about this. Climate change was a three-year campaign. And Bert, I could mention one of the things we picked this up at our congregation and had a church service focused really on this with Singers of the Sacred Web, a local mm-hmm. singers group. Mm-hmm. We had the ecological footprint as an exercise for the congregation to do right in the, you know, in the sermon spot. after church, we had a 100-mile lunch, getting at the idea of reducing transportation costs and eating locally.
Okay.
Then we had a workshop with a speaker from Oxfam, various discussion groups. So these were all taken out of the Kairos suggested programs. And we've been working on that. Also, there was a petition to get the Canadian government to reduce its huge subsidies to the oil industry, to the fossil, to the tar sands and other things like that. Bert, do you have any comments on some of the campaigns we've been doing?
Just to back up a little bit on my own little story here, I've been with Kairos, I think, almost at the very beginning. Harvey Lammer, a good friend of so many people, initiated it here in, mm-hmm. in Regina. So I attended those early meetings. I was believing that I needed to be a part of this ecumenical outreach arm, you know, arm that insists on justice. I also, because of my job as social justice coordinator, attend the Social Justice Conference, which is a Catholic conference, including about 18 dioceses stretching from Winnipeg through Victoria, and they're supposed to bring representatives. And then through the process of a weekend, we always decide what is the telling issue that we can act together on. And it came out to be the environment. You know, and Alberta, of course, is very
right.
concerned about that.
Right.
So I thought, all right, that'll be fairly easy for me to try and connect with people in the Catholic circles to do something on the environment. But I found that that wasn't really that easy of a sell. So I went where the energy was, and the energy was in Kairos, because you have people, and especially Dan, who have very deep environmental concerns. And just speaking about the group that we are locally here, we have a very strong, and it's a group that's bonding. Mm-hmm. We have as many as 10 people out, and we're, of course, expecting more to join. But that group develops an energy of its own. You know, it takes a life of its own. And we, through our discussions, engage in creative thought, and we try and determine what will be the actions that we are willing to engage in. One thing that happened locally here a number of years ago was when the government, the provincial government, decided that we needed to go on nuclear energy. And there was the UDP panel formed, all that sort of thing. Somehow it bothered me a lot that there was going to be no discussion about this.
That seems to be a common thread.
Yeah,
no discussion.
Yeah, yeah. And just backing up a little bit about the integrity of creation. Part of our life together with others is it has to be small. And this is the reason why we got in trouble with Bev Oda and the CETA. And I see that's
we'll
maybe
talk about that after the break.
Later
that's
on,
pretty but, big
but,
topic.
But in
I'd
Kairos,
like to cover that.
And I believe in logical thought, is that what you want is that the local community be put in charge, be allowed to develop its own vision, its own democracy, have its own autonomy, and then not be isolated, but network.
Absolutely.
And the resources have to be available to that community. Mm-hmm. And so then there is that, that's the best way to take care of the environment. And when you aren't taking care of the environment that way, then what you have is two cries that emerge. One is the cry of the poor, and the other is the cry of the earth. And these two are not separate cries. They're the same cries. Because if the earth and the economy and the democracy or the political governance is handled locally, then you have all of these tended to in a healthy way.
You can see that Bert gets a lot of his passion out of his faith and beliefs, and some of the result of that, he got so involved in this UDP public consultation process that he got in his little car, the Geo Metro. I think it's probably been retired, has it, Bert?
The car, yes.
Retired is the right
very,
word?
I had to grieve.
Anyway, he did 12 trips to 12 different ministerial groups around southern Saskatchewan to help them become informed about the nuclear issue. And he also helped to organize a news conference with the bishops, the major church leaders on this subject, which was picked up by the press. So Bert is certainly putting his beliefs into to action. Another thing Bert's been involved with is the Stations of the City. Station, what used to be Stations of the Cross, was pretty strictly a Roman Catholic kind of activity. Now it's through Kairos, more of an ecumenical thing every Good Friday.
Yeah, and Kairos is part of the planning committee. There are 14 stations. What we try to do is to come to a decision about which person representing which group would be good to give a reflection at this particular station. And it's always a justice consideration. So what you have is you have the scriptural reflection on the last day of Jesus' life, death and resurrection.
All right.
But then it's an incarnational thing as well. That same thing is going on today. So we have then an opportunity for some messages to come out, and usually 200 to 300 people gather there. So it's another vehicle, just like this radio station is, another vehicle of
another
making people
of
think.
Media,
yes, it
media
is. We had a very powerful reflection from a survivor of the Rwandan genocide, and she was able to bring home that connection. And so for each of these stations, I did station number, 13.
Okay.
13 was the burial. So I brought up the whole idea of burying as well, nuclear wastes and these other things.
Well, and there's another topic that we've talked about recently on Human Rights Radio.
And what happens in that kind of burial? It's not that living organisms decompose, but actually this kills. And can we afford, and can our children's children afford the cost that is going to bring to humankind?
We've got about a minute and a half left, so go, Bert.
Well, the Good Friday stations offer an opportunity to help people become more aware of the justice issues in the world and to feel the pain. there's a lot of these justice issues. There's suffering and there's pain and there's death involved. So Good Friday, thinking of Jesus' death and pain on the cross, is kind of a very logical and appropriate time to really feel the emotion. And these speakers bring that out.
Right.
Sometimes it helps with a certain building behind, like a government or some other symbol of power and the principalities. So that all helps.
Just to interrupt briefly, the Visitation House, Teresa Hilbig spoke about that very thing, about being under the cross. It was with Mary watching his suffering. She said, if you've ever counseled someone on drug addiction,
right,
and there seems to be no progress, then you've been under the cross. And she did a number of these various things.
So some of the activities that Kairos is involved in is called Urgent Action,
right,
where we write letters to presidents of, you know, countries or whatever, and urge them to, like, there's the threats of assassination and so forth.
And that's something that we have in common, that Amnesty International does the same thing. And we'll talk about this more after the break.
This is Sarah Groves, and it's called I Saw What I Saw.
Face and memory, oh, you.
were just talking about this this song and the video. If it's too bad this isn't TV, because the video is very moving, and I encourage you to go and have a look for it. It's called Sarah Groves, I Saw What I Saw, and you can find it easily on YouTube. So anyway, back to the matters at hand.
Welcome back, everyone. We're on Human Rights Radio, and I'm Mona Hill.
I'm Jim Hutchings.
Nice to be back with you.
And we've
and
got
our guests today,
Dan Beveridge.
Yeah, and Bert Pitzel, and they're both from Kairos. And we're having a fascinating conversation about the history of Kairos, about how Dan and Bert got involved, and the passions that they have for working with this organization on justice issues. We talked a little bit about how climate has sort of entered into the human justice issues in recent years. And before the break, we were talking about things that are done on a local basis as well as sort of an international and national basis. And that was something that Amnesty International and Cairo shares in common, and that's letter writing regarding urgent actions. Do you want to just expand upon that a little bit, and then we'll talk a little bit more about what else you do?
Kairos, with its global partners, often, well, maybe often, too often, has received requests, we're in a crisis, please help. So, for example, a women's human rights organization in Colombia might be threatened. In fact, her office might be shot at. So threats of assassination come up, and we write letters to maybe the president of the country. Or in another case, the president of Ecuador, I think. What happened was we thought it was a progressive regime in Ecuador, but they pulled the status of one of the ecological organizations. I think it was called Acción Ecológica or something like that, because they were concerned about the impact of mining corporations in Ecuador. My wife and I were there. We saw the oil wells near the headwaters of the Amazon, for example, and the flares. So, and there's Aboriginal people there who were affected. Well, we wrote letters to the president, and they got their status back. So that, you know, that helps. And there's other examples, too, of urgent action, and some of the petitions that we'll be talking about a little bit later, what we're doing right now.
Right. Okay. That's wonderful. I see another one of your petitions. We could even talk about that now, is on rent control. We've done a couple of shows on homelessness. Actually, we've done about four or five shows now on homelessness. We've talked about the possibilities of rent control. My past, coming out of Winnipeg over 20 years ago, very familiar with rent controls. They had rent controls in Winnipeg 20 years ago. And the responses that I get when I publicly talk about this or have written letters to the city, to the MLAs, and listen to landlords saying that it would kind of ruin our city, and it would make things ridiculously expensive for landlords, and it wouldn't work in any way, shape, or form. And yet, we know that there are, I think, about a third of the country has rent controls, and they're not bankrupt. Mm-hmm. So go ahead.
Well, Kairos believed that we had to become involved in this housing shortage. And so we started attending some coalition meetings about that. Now, one thing about our Kairos group is we usually split off. One will attend the uranium, somebody will do the housing. Catherine does the transportation and so
forth.
Catherine
Verrill, yes.
So what we're doing is we're sort of staying in touch with that coalition is doing. And if I watch Channel 20, you always hear a petition coming about rent controls and that sort of thing. So we're glad that that action is taking place.
At the provincial legislature.
Yes. And we are going to be supportive in whatever way we think we can, but there's no point in reinventing the wheel, and what we have to do is to watch what the energy is and where it's going, and then be supportive of that. And yes, we did have a letter writing campaign within our little circle there.
Right. About they had asked thing. Various organizations and groups to start their own campaign. And it was a timed thing, wasn't it?
And we do celebrate the fact that there are people who are concerned and they act, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's an example of how at the local level we don't take all of the national campaign exactly. We can work on our own emphases as people feel the need.
As Amnesty is doing with Bill 160 here in Saskatchewan.
We may consider working on the Millennium Development Goals in the new year. We're not sure about that, but that's another possibility.
I, in fact, wrote a letter to Mr. Brad Wall congratulating him on his decision that came up in the Star Phoenix, no nuclear waste storage facility for Saskatchewan. And there had been a lot of coalition work taking place, the Clean Green Saskatchewan, just an amazing number of emails back and forth as they tried to develop what the policy and what the connecting principles were going to be. And so I thought this should be a positive letter. This was a good thing. And a lot of democracy happens over the email activity.
Right. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Mona, another activity that our group was involved in was meeting the four Regina MPs regarding the CETA cuts, or I should say the budget question.
So before we get into that, just give our listeners who may not know a little bit of background on your connection with CETA and how this came to be.
Yeah. Well, right from 1973, Kairos or its predecessors were involved in overseas or international programs and helping overseas partners do a variety of development projects. And so this has been there's been a good working relationship with CETA over the decades, right from that time.
And that's the Canadian International Development Agency.
Canadian International Development Agency, right. Exactly. So in 2009, Kairos, as usual, worked with CETA on using the CETA criteria and goals and so forth and coming up with a good program that CETA was quite comfortable with. And it involved $7.1 million to be spent over, was it 3 years into the future, 3 or 4 years, and they didn't get any answer back to this request, so they got a little extension on the existing funding, and then just before the existing funding terminated, I think it was 1 day or 2 days before that date, they received a telephone call saying your request for funding has been rejected.
From Bevoda. Yeah.
So that was a terrible shock. It's not quite exact to say that it was a funding cut, but it was certainly a cut in the projected funding for the new year. So as a result, that money totally disappeared. So the projects, not Canadian education and awareness projects, but global partnership projects in other countries, these were all, it looked like they would all have to be cut. So that was a major crisis. So there was actually no explanation given for that other than, well, they didn't meet CETA's goals. Yeah. Or criteria.
And was that the truth?
Well, the impression was left with Kairos that things were going really well. It had received a very positive report from their 2006 through 2009 program development work. And so they were expecting the same. And it moved rather quickly through the staff. Kairos was expecting, I believe it was a little bit over $7 million. So that was going to be used in work with their partners overseas. And it seems like, this is the story, I'm going to go out on a limb, is that Bevoda, according to the wishes of CETA staff, was going to okay that this was meeting the criteria. And then at the last minute, the higher powers of the party decided that this was not in keeping with their ideology. So the word "not" was written, reversing the whole decision. Now, what happened here is that there was two basic approaches that met head on. The one approach that we believe in is the local, where you have community-based activity, where you have community governance and so forth, spaces of democracy that can happen in developing countries. Now, the other approach is where you have the global financial system that is in belief that we need a system worldwide in which money will make money, and all countries should be open for corporate activity in which shareholders can make money off of it. Now, if the communities are in charge of the resources, it means then that corporate activity will be limited and that they will not be able to make profits. So you have two dynamics taking place here. One is the global casino, where speculators can make money on betting on things.
Right.
And so they can drive up the price of food, make money on it going up. They can drive the price of food down, make money on it going down. Same with energy and so forth. What we have right now is a situation in the world where the cost of things is not, or the price of things is not related to the cost of production. So what we have here is we have a situation where you have belief in that approach to world versus creating democratic spaces where the local and the community sort of is to be in charge. And
right.
Yes.
I should point out that that the official line has been, though, that Kairos simply did not meet the funding criteria.
Okay.
And anything else, I think, you know, is really speculation on our part.
My speculation.
And we do a lot of speculating, yeah.
We have
oftentimes it's pretty well informational-based.
And I should say that we met that kind of experience in our meeting with the MLAs.
Okay.
If there is openness to hearing,
yes,
that's one approach. But if there is, this becomes a teaching moment where you are there to hear how good this is.
Right. So based on that, I have a question. What do you expect to come out of the federal election result in terms of having lost this funding? Your speculation about ideological backlash, maybe. Do you have any expectations for change at all?
I was surprised that no party picked up on that, because Kairos reaches into 11 different churches and church organizations. So why wouldn't other parties say, if we are elected, we will restore the CETA funding?
Well, maybe this is a question in the last two or three days before the election. If some of these door knocking, you might want to ask your candidate.
And it's not that you would pick that issue and say, okay, I'll vote this party
right.
in because they've done that.
Right.
I think the opposition parties were quite content to use this Bev Oda incident as an example saying there's lack of trust, and that's where they got the vote against the government. What was the term that was used? And I wouldn't want to speculate on what will happen after the election on this, but what I do know is that as a result of this 7.1 expected funding to disappearing, there were quite a lot of churches and individuals who contributed money. So it didn't all disappear. I think, Bert, probably about 16% of the programs were able to continue because of this flowing of money and a great deal of interest across Canada in supporting these projects. However, many were chopped.
Right.
They just couldn't go ahead.
Right.
I just could mention a couple of them here.
Sure.
For example, Congo, where my wife and I used to work, Democratic Republic of Congo. The eastern side of Congo was so influenced by the Rwandan genocide. for example, in Goma. I've been in Goma three times, and That's where so much of the conflict still is going on right now. In fact, we have a few Canadian UN folks there. Well, there's the both parties, whether they're government or whether they're various opposition groups, have used rape as a weapon of war.
Right.
And so one of the organizations that was counting on work, and they were going to do some good work, is called Héritiers de la Justice, heirs of justice. And they were they had a support group to help women deal with this problem. There are several projects now that are trying to get to women who ordinarily would be thrown out of the community for what happened to
for
them.
Being raped.
And physical, mental, all the rest of this. So that is one example. And the head of that program, actually, he was assassinated because people didn't like what he was doing to organize this. So there's one example. 25,000 women and 17,000 men who benefit from the program, this human rights program in the Congo, will be directly impacted by that decision not to fund Kairos. Other examples, for example, in Colombia, there's Kairos supports a grassroots women's human rights organization, and a similar thing.
Yeah.
I could run through. There's a whole bunch of examples where programs are gone.
Go ahead, Bert.
Well, what I'm saying is that the funding cuts being political, I think Kairos, in a sense, dug its own grave because we started taking a deep interest in the tar sands and the greenhouse gases that are produced there. We sent a delegation of, I think it was about 13 people, and their job was not to go and condemn it, but just to take a reading. They visited Edmonton, Fort McMurray, Fort Chipewyan, and communities in between, and then they just drew attention to that and made some statements about cautioning how this will proceed, recommending that the projects be stopped until environmental assessments had been taken.
Okay.
Another thing we did is we talked about the Copenhagen talks.
Right.
And we had the bell ringing activity in that regard. And
you rang your bell a little too
and
loud.
I think that's what we did. We rang our bell too loudly.
I think another thing too that I think happened was during the Palestinian conflict in Gaza, Kairos criticized both the Israelis and the Palestinians, but that didn't go over well.
I think Kenny got Kairos mixed up with another group called Kairos functioning in the Middle East.
Kairos
possibly.
Yeah,
it's very possible.
So if you look, you can check out Kairos's position in regards to the Israeli-Palestinian on the website.
And we have to move on to our, because we could do a whole hour show just on this.
Yeah.
We have to move on to what's happening now. We have a few minutes left, and I need to make a couple of announcements before we do go.
We have an Aboriginal Awareness Workshop coming up on Saturday, May the 7th, with an Aboriginal facilitator, and it doesn't cost too much, $15, I think, and that includes both breakfast and noon meal, I think.
Right.
So anyway, that information is available, and it's going to be at Christ Lutheran Church. Starts at 8:30 in the morning.
On Dewdney, just west of the Louvain.
But that needs to be pre-registration is necessary.
Right.
For that.
And how do they register? I've already registered. How do you register? Was it Suzanne Sauder
would be the person to phone about that.
So if you went online, you could find this event online, couldn't you?
It may not be on the Kairos website.
I believe it's on the Archdiocesan website.
Or you could get a hold of me and Jim if you want.
Right.
Call the station or send an email to Human Rights Radio, and we can direct you to that. And I was talking to Suzanne yesterday, and she said she's only got room for, I think it was 20 people.
Yes.
So if you want to go to this, it's going to be really good. and get some information about Aboriginal awareness here locally, I think it was, wasn't it, that they were focusing on?
Yes.
We're also, and Amnesty's going to be there. We're going to have an informational table as well. So this is where our great partnership comes in.
Just to go to our committee, our circle, first of all, we're so privileged to have Dan as our chair because he kind of keeps this thing going and he makes sure everybody has a chance to speak and so forth.
That's great.
We have about six different faith groups represented there. And like I say, it has its own energy. It develops a life of its own. Everybody participates and we start launching in
it
projects.
It sounds like a great workshop. If you wanted to become involved in Kairos, but you're not a member of a particular church group, can you do that?
Yes.
We have 1 minute left. That's great. You can go to Kairos and find out. And in that last minute, I just wanted to mention, like maybe the last 20 seconds, that the Regina Making Peace Vigil is their fourth birthday next Thursday, May 5th at noon. There will be cake and balloons on the Scar Street Mall. And thank you for being with us. Take it away, Jim.
Every day and every moment in every corner of the world, injustice cries out for your intervention. To paraphrase a great humanitarian, if you can't help everybody, just help one. And whether the abuses stop immediately or take a long time to end, the gift of your attention and intervention can make a profound and positive impact on the ability of individuals and communities to endure and prevail. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."